Well, it's great to have you on the show today. A little bit of unseasonable weather down here in the Valley of the Sun. A little cool on Friday.
Hi, Marty. Great to be with you. You know, Friday was one of the coldest days I've experienced here in Arizona this late in the spring. I remember we had a game with Luke Pinella managing and Boach was managing years ago, and it got this cold. A couple raindrops hit the ground, and they told the umpires we had enough. But we labored through eight innings today, and we were able to get all our work in.
Well, good things happening at River Islands. Well, five new neighborhoods are opening up right now, single-story homes and two-story homes. But here's the best part. There's a trail alongside the San Joaquin River for walkers, joggers, and bicyclists. Not only is the San Joaquin one of California's longest rivers, but boaters can sail from Lathrop to the San Francisco Bay. Now, I never ask you this question. Are you a boater at all?
No. Well, I love to get out on a boat whenever I can. I've been out in the Bay Area, certainly in Hawaii. I love being on the water. And you mentioned River Islands. Not only do you have the water to do that in the summertime, but you have so many other things that you would just mention. There's not a lot of communities in the Bay Area that are affordable and have so many options for activities. And we've mentioned it before. The schools are within walking distance. It really is. It feels like a community because there's so much activity that everybody knows. Most everybody. The town is certainly growing, but there's just a great feel out there at River Islands with so much to do.
Well, I want to see you with one of those yachting caps, you know, that they have in the movies.
Yeah. There was a Caddyshack with Rodney Dangerfield and was Ted Baxter. Yeah, he had that. There it was.
Very good. All right. A couple of things to talk about this week. One, the passing of Norm Sherry. And, well, he was a coach for the Giants under Roger Craig from 86 to 91, the brother of Larry Sherry, a famous pitcher for the Dodgers. He made it to the big leagues for a couple of years. But some of your thoughts about Norm Sherry.
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate to be around Norm for a little bit in spring training, but a good month of the season back in, I think it was 90 or 91, I actually got a September call-up from the San Francisco Giants after managing San Jose out of A-ball, which, you know, really was a huge treat to be able to do that. Of course, I didn't get the big leagues for another 7 years as an actual coach, but got to know Norm and Roger and Bob Lillis and these guys a lot closer as they let me sit on the bench and watch them work. And Norm, you know, he was one of those old-school pitching coaches. Been in the game forever, kind of reminded me of Harvey Haddix with Pittsburgh, who also I saw as a young guy because he'd been in the game so long and everybody loved him. And I didn't know him personally that well, but I certainly can remember that walk and being around him with the San Francisco Giants.
Boy, you mentioned Harvey Haddix. They called him the Kitten. He was a great fielder. 12 perfect innings against the Milwaukee Braves before Joe Adcock hit one out. That was very famous in the late 50s, Harvey Haddix. But Norm Sherry, for me, is very special, and I remember it during the 60s. Well, he was a catcher for the Dodgers. Now, you can relate to this. They trained in Vero Beach, and they would go on road trips for like 2 hours to Orlando or Bradenton or something like that. So, of course, the guys who got to go on the road trips maybe weren't the frontline players at those days. Well, Norm Sherry got to go on the trip. It was a bus trip. And he took a young left-hander along with him who hadn't really broken through yet as a Dodger. He had good stuff, like a lot of pitchers we see. And Norm Sherry said to him, "Look, kid, why don't you just throw the ball down the middle? Your stuff will take care of itself, and I think you'll be fine." So the kid went out there against the Minnesota Twins and threw six, seven innings, a great ball. And they went back on the bus to drive back to Vero Beach, and the kid said to Norm Sherry, "Boy, I think I got something. I think you really helped me, and now I'm just going to try to throw strikes." And that kid, number 32, Sandy Koufax. How about that?
Wow, that is something, you know. And when a player like Sandy tells that story, you know that Norm really made an impact in his career. And I'm still amazed, Marty, at the knowledge that you have. I mean, Harvey Haddix and the Kitten, and now this story about Norm Sherry. Two things I did not know. So it's great to hear that. That's good stuff.
Well, you know, I always think about the things that people that you met along the way. Did you ever meet Koufax and talk to him? I mean, Marischal is part of our world. Perry is part of our world. What about Koufax?
Yeah, no, I said hello. I never had a chance to actually talk to him. You know, he doesn't come around a lot, as most people that know Sandy have heard, you know, with the Dodgers. But he has been there on special occasions, and he'll be on the field on occasion. But he was a little harder to pin down to have a conversation with. But, yeah, he is still one of the icons in the game, and someone just like Willie Mays and Gaylord that you mentioned. Of course, we know him being with the Giants. But, you know, all kinds of people, young, old, they all gravitate toward these guys because they were such special players.
Boys, it's true. Well, the third base coach of the Giants is with us. Well, another part of baseball, I love talking about the players in the game with you. Nick Markakis announced his retirement. Well, now you've seen Markakis, and of course, as a third base coach, we'll talk about Markakis' arm in right field. But I had no idea. He holds a consecutive errorless streak for an outfielder, 398. He's played the seventh most games in Major League Baseball history in right field. 11 of 15 years, 155 games, 288, 357 on base. And he was a mainstay of the Orioles and the Braves. But, you know, this is a guy who's under the radar. Well, but Nick Markakis was a heck of a player.
Yeah, you know, he was. And you know, he was with the Orioles for a long time. And I didn't really know him as well as I know the National League players until he came over to the National League with Atlanta, or we saw him in Interleague. But I liked him. And it was just a few years ago when he signed with Atlanta. He was a guy on my list that I wanted on our club. You know, I didn't know he held those types of records, but he's a professional hitter, used the whole field, and was a outstanding outfielder. He didn't make mistakes. And as a third base coach, you mentioned, he was solid average to above, but accurate. I mean, he didn't short hop the catcher on his throw. He was always right on the money. And if he had a chance to throw you out, he did. So I didn't realize he retired. I mean, he was still had pretty good year. I didn't see him last year, but the year before he still put up some pretty good numbers and still makes an impact in that lineup. So I'm sorry to see him go with a real pro.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the reasons there's no DH in the National League. So they've got Acuna. They got the kid in center, Pache. And then they signed Ozuna for left field, so there was really no spot for him. And I guess it's an argument for the DH. I don't know, the Giants probably maybe don't have the classic DH in camp, but that's one of the arguments. It takes a job away from a veteran.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I wonder, you said he announced his retirement. You know, when you've been in the game as long as him, and I don't know his family situation, but you still have the COVID restrictions where you're not allowed to see your wife on the road at this point in time. We hope that changes. But, you know, he's had such a great career. And to be a part-time player and to be away from his family where they can't enjoy probably one of his last seasons with him, you know, maybe that entered into it as well. Because, you know, it really is hard on some of these veteran guys, especially with kids that are older. It's always tough on the family and the wife. But he may have said, you know what, there's no need for me to do this as a part-time player, so I'm going to go ahead and retire. I'm speculating.
No, good point. Very good point. Well, one player I want to ask you about before we take our break, and watching the box scores this week, a kid, I call him a kid, he's 31 years old, but his name pops up a lot, Jason Krizan, if I'm saying it correctly,
yeah.
Whoa. Tell me about this.
I think so. I'm not quite sure either.
Tell me about him, because it looks like he plays all over the place. He had a couple of big hits this week as well. 31 years old.
Yeah, no, he really gives you a nice at-bat. And, you know, again, I like to use that word professional, but, you know, he's a seasoned AAA guy. He knows what he's doing out on the field. And you could see a guy that loves to play a game. He plays hard. I mean, I haven't seen this guy go more than full out in anything that he does. So he's played a little second for us. He plays in the outfield. And the other day he won the game for us with his heads-up play. When the ball was hitting the gap with men on first and second, and the ball got stuck, and the go-ahead run was getting ready to score, but the ball got stuck below the fence in the ground, and the guy was scoring easily from first. He threw up his hands, and the runner had to go back to third base. And then two batters later, there was a fly ball down a left field line. He made a diving catch to end the game. So he won that game single-handedly for us. And I like the kid. He plays hard. He's a gamer, and he's been playing a lot so far.
Good. Okay. Well, we'll keep our eye on him. All right. We'll take a break. We'll be back with Ron Motis, our third base coach, the professor. New minor league rule changes and experiments are a big deal now for Major League Baseball. Well, you broke the story on Murph and Mac this week that it was coming. So let's take a break. I want to come back and talk to Woe about some of these moves in the minor leagues and changes, because if they're in the minor leagues, they're just a step away from the major leagues. So we'll come back with Will right after this. Back with the third base coach of the Giants, Ron Wotus, the professor. Will, minor league rule changes, the first which you have endorsed on the radio. I've heard you talk about it with you and I over the years. But the first is, in certain minor leagues, you must keep four infielders on the dirt. Now, it doesn't say you couldn't put them all between first and second, but you have to keep four on the dirt, and that's doing away with the shift.
Yeah, well, that's in Double A. If my memory serves me correct, I went through most of these with Kyle Haynes today, who's been on the phone calls with Theo Epstein, and you know he gave us the rundown. But I believe that's in Double A, and the first half of the season, they're going to make every infielder stay on the dirt. Now, they can shift, but you can't go on the grass, which that part of it I'm not in favor of, because when I first started playing this game as a second baseman, you played big, slow hitters, power hitters out on the grass a little bit. And, you know, if you're athletic, you can do that. There's been a lot of players that done that, not just in the shift, you know, against Ted Williams, but they just get a little extra range out there. And I think they should be allowed to do that at second base. But the second part of the rule is, I think in the second half, they're going to eliminate the shift where you can't put everybody on the other side of the field. And I'm hoping if they eliminate the shift that they'll let the second baseman go on the grass a little bit. I just think you're taking away from the athlete if he's able to do it, because not every infielder can. I mean, if you want to play in the grass as a third baseman or shortstop, or a first baseman where you can't get the first on a ground ball, I think you're going to have a lot of problems. So that's how I feel about that Double-A new rule change that they're going to implement.
Well, you know, years ago, there was a very famous Bay Area player. He played for the Reds and the old Boston Braves, won a couple of batting titles. He was a catcher, Ernie Lombardi. Well, he was the slowest guy ever in Major League Baseball, but he could hit. So they played him deep. The shortstop and third baseman played him in short left field. And he still led the league in hitting, but that's what they did to Ernie Lombardi, and it's kind of what you're saying now. The one part of this rule that's weird is that you have to have the four infielders with their feet on the dirt as the pitch is being delivered. So does that mean when the pitch is on its way being delivered, they can run all over the place? How about that?
Yeah, well, I think what they're trying to do, and I'm not sure, but, you know, typically a lot of infielders, especially at second base or at shortstop, you start on the grass. And as you go into your pre-pitch movement, you walk in a couple steps. So then you get into your ready position, has to be on the dirt. But I've always walked into it. You know what I'm saying? So you just don't stand still and jump up and down. You kind of walk a couple steps in. And then you keep your body in motion, and you end up on the dirt. So I guess that's why they're wording it that way.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. All right. They've enlarged the bases. The bases normally are 15 by 15, and the AAA leagues will be playing with bases that are 18 by 18. So you get to first base a little more quickly, and maybe you can steal a base a little bit more quickly, and the base is bigger, so you may not have guys flying over the base. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, you know, it takes some of these rule changes a while to sink in with me, but I don't think that's a drastic change to the game, having a little bigger base. And the way Kyle explained it to me is the base isn't 3 inches wider on each side. It's only an inch and a half wider in circumference. So it's really not a big a change as one would think. You know, they made the base a little flatter and of a different material because you see in the rain guys slip on the base. You've seen guys slip stepping on top. It's a little softer material, so they're looking out for the safety of the player. But, you know, the whole idea of making the base a little bit bigger is I guess they calculated that there's going to be more stolen bases because you don't have as far to run. You know how many bang-bang plays there are at second base. It's going to be a shorter distance. And, of course, with the analysts today, they have it all calculated out on how many more stolen bases are possible. And I think that's what they're trying to do. They want the game to be more exciting for the fans because, you know, the strikeouts and the homers and the lack of the running game and action is what Major League Baseball is trying to improve. And that's why they're making the base this way.
Joe Maddon today of the Angels said, you know what they should do? They should deaden the ball. And therefore, you know, you won't have a million home runs and you'll have to play the game and hit the ball all over the place and run a little bit more. What do you think of that? That's Joe Maddon talk.
Yeah, you know what? I tend to agree with them. You know, I thought the game was a beautiful game. I mean, I've played it since I was in Little League. You know, there's something special about baseball and the way it's been played. And, of course, I've played it the other way my whole life, you know, and then all of a sudden, here we go. The game is changing, the way the players are valued, the way they value speed, the way they value, you know, the pitcher hitting. There's so many less decisions in the game. And, you know, I've been a person, just like a lot of people still in the game, that adjusts with the times. But it is a beautiful game. And, you know, I think it just needs slight adjustments. And I think what Joe said makes a lot of sense because you wouldn't be hitting all these homers and you'd have to create runs. And that's what brings excitement, the suicide squeeze, you know, the bunt or the second guessing with the fans. It's just not walks and, you know, strikeouts and home runs. So I think it's a good point.
You know, isn't it funny how the pendulum swings back and forth? That they used to play baseball like that, the way you described it, then everybody loves home runs. And now the pendulum is swinging back a little bit because they want more action when the game is going on. All right, one more we'll talk about. The pickoffs, the first base. You can only make two pickoffs to first base, and you've got to step off. And maybe you could explain this to make your pickoff move. There's no more of this, you know, the front leg going partially towards home or to first base. And you can only do two. And if you throw over a third time, it's a balk, or you better get the guy out. So one thing that hit me was, can you imagine the lead you'll get after they throw over twice?
Well, exactly right, Marty. This is one that, again, they're trying to create more actions and stolen bases, and they're using the minor leagues as a guinea pig to see how it looks. Well, you know, the one flawed thought with that, in my opinion, is in A-ball, people steal like crazy because pitchers are slow to the plate. If you have speed, they don't handle the ball. The pitchers are more worried about making pitches than holding runners. But to your point, only two throwovers, again, is to speed up the game, right? They want to speed up the game. And this is done in A-ball. So what a pitcher's going to have to do, he's going to have to step back. A right-handed pitcher, you know how a pitcher steps off the mound, yep. A righty, he steps back? He's going to have to step back before he throws to first base. And how about this, the lefty? And this is where they're really changing the game. The lefty would always lift his leg, and he can stay right on that plane of the rubber. If his foot passed the plane of the rubber towards second base, he had to go home, and that's what the runner would read, whether he'd go or not. But as long as he stayed on that plane and his foot starts coming down, he had to step more home than the first base. If he steps more home and throws the first, it's a balk. So they're eliminating that that with a lefty completely. Now, a lefty has to step back. So they're going to step back and do that side arm throw when they step back and make the snap throw. I mean, the runners are going to be able to get huge leads. I think that, you know, many, many people are going to be able to steal bases. And then with the limited throwovers as well, I mean, you're going to be able to get 2 to 3 to 4 feet bigger leads on these guys, and you won't be able to stop the runners.
Wow. Well, that's going to be interesting. All right, these are minor league rules. Well, let me ask you this. On the Giants, give me who you think would lead the team in stolen bases if these rules were in the major leagues?
Well, let's see. Well, our speed guy, Steven Duggar, you know, for one. But I think, you know, even more so than the speed guys, I think you would have guys that are average runners getting more stolen bases, because it slows you down completely. And I'm not going to get into the numbers, but when you have to step back and throw over, it's almost twice as long to get the ball to first base. And if you just turn and throw, and it's at second base the same way, Marty, you just can't turn and throw to second, stepping to second. You got to step off the rubber with a runner on second base as well. So I don't think we'll see that in the major leagues anytime soon. I personally don't. Maybe some of the other, I think the shift obviously will be something that they will negotiate. And I think the players will be on board with eliminating the shift. I think that will probably be instituted next season when this, you know, player and the union and the owner's contract is renegotiated. But I don't think you're going to see some of these other rules in place.
All right. It's a great discussion, and I know the fans like talking about it. Well, lastly, we're about halfway through spring training. A lot of younger players still in camp. How do you judge a younger player? When do you look to say, okay, he can do it? Because early on, you're really young players versus young players.
Right. And that's a great point, Marty. And, you know, you try not to get too high watching the guy early in the spring. You know, usually the pitchers are throwing more fastballs, and, you know, they're not facing every pitcher in the game major league caliber. You got players all across in the games, you know, trying to make the team. So usually the second half of the game, they're facing, you know, more minor league players. But I think the thing that really stands out, first thing, as the old scouts would tell you, you got to grade the player out and see what kind of ability he has. You know, his hit, run, field, throw, and hit with power. Where does he grade out? Does he grade out as a major league player or not? And if he's a fringe guy, you know, he's really going to have to prove it to you. If he doesn't have the tools you're looking for, at least two of the major league tools that you're looking for, I think you're going to have to give him some time to prove himself. I mean, look at Bill Miller. Bill Miller was a great player for the Giants. And when you graded him out, he didn't grade out as necessarily an everyday regular. But the more you watch them, the more you appreciate him. You know, we like to call them baseball players. He always competed, and that's one thing you can't measure is their heart. So in the old days, Marty, you know, it was harder for these younger guys to make a team, because they tear up spring training, and then they go during the season. You know, they said, well, we want to make sure he can do it for a longer period of time. You know, it's easy to have a good month in this game, but to do it for 6 months is another story. So you got to watch him a little bit. You got to watch him a little bit, and you got to evaluate him against the good players. And the other side is, because I'm getting a little long-winded here, you got to see if he can make an adjustment, right? Mm-hmm. See him against a better competition and see if he can make an adjustment, because they're going to figure you out in the minor leagues. You may be hot for a few in the major leagues. You may be hot for a few weeks, but the minute they see your weakness, they're going to attack it, and it might be a different ball of wax for you.
Boy, that's baseball with the professor. No, you hit it hard, Wo. This is the time of year we talk about this stuff. So great to have you on, and I look forward to these weekly conversations, and that's what going to school with the professor is all about.
Marty, or should I say the rabbi, it's been a pleasure being with you as always. And again, I enjoy being with you because I learn something about the history of the game every time we're on.
Ernie Lombardi, they played him in short left field, and he still led the league in hitting. How about that? That's a good one.
Wow, that's something. Yeah.
All right. Have a great week, and I will talk to you next week. That is Ron Wotus. Take care, Will.
You too, Marty. Bye-bye.
Okay, more coming up. You're listening to KNBR 104.5 and 680, the sports leader.